Simone de Beauvoir and Jean-Paul Sartre had a famously unconventional relationship. They rejected marriage and never lived together. They openly had other lovers, and they were often friends with their lovers. On occasion, they even shared their lovers. Their original agreement was that their love would be absolute and all their other loves secondary. But as is often the case when emotions and theory both come into play, the jealousy and secrets they swore would never come between them flourished. Hazel Rowley has written a biography of their relationship, Tête à Tête. It is published by HarperCollins, and it brings her back to our show today. Hello.
Hi, Leonard.
This is an odd kind of biography. It's a biography of a relationship instead of a person. You say you admired their relationship as a young woman.
Well, I still do, actually.
Messy. It's like a... two existentialist philosophers living out a soap opera.
Yes, but there's something to be said for a soap opera. It fascinates the rest of us. When I say I still admire it, I admire... It's true that some reviewers have done a little puritanical jig about the promiscuity and the lies and so on, and I'm not defending that. They were flawed. Their relationship was flawed. But they had the courage and the imagination to invent their own relationship. You know how we're born into a grid of social conventions. We are supposed to be married. We're supposed to be virgins when we marry. That was certainly the case in 1929 when Beauvoir met Sartre. It was supposed to be the case for women, not for men, I might add. And they had the courage, also the imagination to have a relationship that was really equal. And how many relationships, even today, are really equal?
Actually, when they consummated the relationship, she was a virgin. And he had had a lot of experiences, mostly with prostitutes. We'll
yes,
get to that.
He had done the typical middle-class male thing. He'd gone to brothels. He'd sown his wild oats, as they called it.
But it didn't begin all that promisingly. Didn't she send her sister when he first asked her to meet him for a drink?
Yes, that wasn't a good start because Sartre knew actually it was because Simone de Beauvoir was in love with another man who was Sartre's friend and who was very jealous. He knew exactly what would happen, and he was right. Sartre would try and pinch her from him. And so Simone de Beauvoir sent her sister along, and she told her sister, "You'll recognize this guy in the cafe. He wears thick glasses, and he's very ugly." Mm-hmm. And she walked up to Sartre and said she was Simone's sister. And he said, "How did you recognize me?" And she said, "Well, you were wearing thick glasses." And he said, "There's another guy in the other corner who's wearing thick glasses." He knew exactly how she knew.
He won first place, she second in the Agrégation in 1929. Is there any kind of an exam that even is similar to that outside of France?
Not that I know of, because it's a competitive exam. They say in advance that they will fail something like, I don't know the figure, something like 90%. And philosophy was probably the most competitive of all these national exams because philosophy was the subject that the best and the brightest went into. So here they were, that their courtship took place in 1929 against a background of preparing for this incredibly competitive exam. And they helped each other. It was their romance took place in that atmosphere.
And after they fell in love, a colleague of Beauvoir's, Colette Aldry, said, "It was so intense that sometimes it made others who saw it sad not to have it." So
yes.
I guess everybody thought they were an ideal couple, but then Audrey has an affair with Sartre.
Yes, and Simone de Beauvoir knew that, of course. She knew that Audrey was having an affair with Sartre. The thing that has to be said in Beauvoir and Sartre's defense is that from the beginning they agreed that they would tell each other everything. Actually, the most important thing for them was that they were going to be writers, and they thought that writers need experience. Monogamy isn't as good as polygamy. Polygamy, you meet lots of people, you become intimate with their bodies and their minds and so on. Actually, I think this has a lot going for it for writers. You do have to experience the world.
But
they were honest. They were honest to each other.
But almost all open marriages have serious problems. People theoretically think that they can handle it, but then come the emotions. And That happened here. Although it's interesting that after they slept together, she wrote, "With Sartre, who is not sensual, the harmony of our bodies has a meaning which makes our love more beautiful." As I understand that, she's saying he wasn't a very good lover, but
I know
that makes us even closer. Hard.
That comment is hard to interpret. Sartre was not a good lover, and I think it was just as well for Simone de Beauvoir that she had others.
And his dream was to be a scholarly Don Juan. His golden tongue was going to be the great seducer.
Sartre had a real complex about his ugliness, and it's fair to say that objectively he really was an ugly man in physique. And I think he made an early existential choice, as it were, which is that he would seduce women as effectively as a handsome man might. And his armament was going to be his power of words.
But if he was a lousy lover, why was he always on the prowl? Was it really the conquest that was so important?
Absolutely.
The New York Times guy reviewer said he was a version of Hugh Hefner without the bathrobe, but with a more highly evolved patter.
Yes, well, I thought that was rather good. I mean, the fact is that such, it was not pre-epic obsession with him. He was no Kennedy. It was not the sex itself. I think it was because of this complex about his ugliness that he needed to seduce beautiful women.
They had to be gorgeous. There's a certain hypocrisy there. And Beauvoir is a very handsome woman.
She was. She really was.
And was a great hit with women. Sometimes there were more female crushes than male crushes.
Both of them had this extraordinary power of attracting younger people. They were first-rate teachers. They were so charismatic. They were so adventurous. The way they traveled, the way they talked, their interest in books and ideas and encouraging other people. That still today, when I talk to people who had been their young lovers, they just kept saying to me, they were so exciting. They were just such wonderful company, Hazel. Azel, they call me in France.
Azel. I'm speaking with Azel Rowley, whose latest book is Tête à Tête, Simone de Beauvoir and Jean-Paul Sartre. It is published by HarperCollins. You say that Beauvoir said that the one thing that freed her from going down the conventional path to marriage was her father's loss of his fortune.
That's right, you see. We've got to put them back in the context of their times. And in 1929, when they met, women didn't have the vote. Women could not enter the École Normale Supérieure, the elite institution which Sartre went to, closed to women. And even more shocking, women, if they wanted, you know, a sort of good bourgeois marriage, had to bring a dowry with them. And Simone de Beauvoir, looking back, said, it was a good thing that her father lost his stocks. He had stocks in Russia, and in the 1918 revolution, her father lost his money. And he used to say to them, you two girls are going to have to get a job. And that's why she studied philosophy at the Sorbonne. That's why she met Sartre. That's why she became a teacher, then a writer.
Well, there was a lot of confusion before we started doing this as to whether to call her de Beauvoir or Beauvoir. You call her Beauvoir.
Yes, there's a bizarre French grammatical rule that if the name is monosyllabic, then you use the de, so it's de Gaulle. But Beauvoir has two syllables, so it's Beauvoir.
Did she ever regret her independence? She once said, I would so like to have the right of being simple and very weak, of being a woman. In what a desert world I walk, so arid, with the only oasis of my intermittent esteem for myself.
You've picked a quote that from her private journal when she was 18, before she met Sartre. She was 21 when she met Sartre. And yes, she was very lonely. She did not even dare admit to her mother and the friends she had that she had lost her faith in God. Remember, this was Catholic France. It was perfectly acceptable for men not to go to church, but for women not to go to church, they were something, you know, something akin to being a whore. So she was very lonely in those years. Sartre changed everything. Her education changed everything. And no, there's no way that she regretted being independent. In fact, her relationship with Sartre was the subject matter for her memoirs, how she became a free woman and what she did with her freedom.
Well, part of the freedom was that she went into philosophy, which was looked down upon by religious people in France.
It was a scandal, exactly. You did not send your daughter to study philosophy. What sort of ideas was she going to come away with?
Sartre said that a transparent approach, total honesty about their other relationships would keep jealousy from rearing its ugly head. But as much as she tried, you argued that that never really happened, at least with Beauvoir. Did Sartre ever become jealous as well?
Well, actually, I had no evidence of Sartre being jealous of Simone de Beauvoir's rather gorgeous young lovers. I mean, Nelson Algren was a very good-looking man, her Chicago lover, and Claude Lanzmann, the young Lanzmann, was 27 when he had an affair with Simone de Beauvoir.
The maker of Shoah, many years later.
The man who made later the documentary Shoah, gorgeous-looking man in his late 20s. And Sartre showed no sign of being jealous of these men. He showed he was certainly enormously jealous, absolutely twisted with jealousy, when his other women were not interested in him. Both of them knew what jealousy was, but they believed that as good existentialists, in other words, people who make choices, jealousy is a natural emotion, but not something that one should encourage in oneself. It was something you should work on with your willpower.
But at the same time, they did keep secrets from each other, so they were worried.
I don't think they... little things, maybe, but on the whole, they knew things about each other.
To some degree, she was a way of his getting lovers. He had affairs with women that she'd had affairs with. And then they had threesomes as well.
Yes. Well, Beauvoir had these young women who she was teaching who fell in love with first with her, and then Sartre would move in on them. And because the relationship between Sartre and Beauvoir was really so sexy to observe, I think that increased their status in the eyes of others. Even for men, I think even Claude Lanzmann was very fascinated by the relationship that Sartre and Beauvoir had, and part of his fascination with getting into bed with Simone de Beauvoir was that he was getting closer to Sartre. He wouldn't hate me for saying that. He would agree.
Despite having what she called a harem of women, she still claimed to be a heterosexual.
Yes.
Not a bisexual?
She did prefer men. I think that she was very intimate with women, and she was very empathetic. And she, particularly in the last 20 years of her life, she was very close to Sylvie, who became her adopted daughter because Simone de Beauvoir needed an heir. But no, her big, big passions were with men.
And I wonder about the fact that so many of the relationships were with younger people, because they were in this mentoring position, or simply because they liked 16-year-olds and 18-year-olds and 21-year-olds?
Well, it's a good question, and of course it's a little dubious because being with younger people has a power element which you can easily abuse, and I think that Sartre in particular occasionally did. But I think that they were such exciting people to be with, and they did like changing minds and encouraging people. They liked youth. They rather fetishized youthfulness, and they thought that, you know, young people have more open minds. And so they tended to be, that was anyway their justification for being a lot with younger people.
Well, when Lacan psychoanalyzed one of the women, Bianca Binfeld, he talked about this parental element in the relationship. How did Beauvoir come to America? She said she used to think of Paris as the center of the world until she came to Manhattan. And how did she meet Algren, in Manhattan or in Chicago?
She met him in Chicago through friends Peggy Guggenheim and others who were in New York. Both of them were terribly excited about America. During the Second World War period, you know, when France was in such a bad state with rationing and poverty and the German occupation, both of them had been enormously influenced by American literature, people like Dos Passos and Hemingway and Steinbeck. They were keenly interested in jazz. Beauvoir, her accent was strong, but she actually wrote and read English fluently. Sartre didn't. But she was the one who introduced him to these American writers. And they write about their excitement, the very word New York, Memphis, New Orleans, it filled them with thrill. And when they came here at the end of the war, they loved the place.
Just one more thing, Sartre at the end really seems to be become more politically radical. Did Beauvoir as well?
Yes, she followed him in radical politics, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because all this love life really is after hours, you know. After they'd done enormously hard day's work, they were both prolific, they were pioneers in so many ways. Sartre was really regarded as a hero in the Third World as well as in Europe, and Beauvoir, of course, with The Second Sex, was a real pioneer.
Hazel Rowley is the author of two previous books, Christina Stead and Richard Wright. This one is Tête à Tête, and it is from HarperCollins. Thank you so much.